So, as I have been, also mentioning in the guided meditation, in a way, we can say that the Buddha's teaching is all about starting to see, starting to understand, and also starting to change, how we relate to our experience. And because usually we have a tendency, to create stories around some core beliefs which we have, which we often, either they are very early conditioning, or cultural conditioning, family conditioning, some traumatic experiences. So, and they stay, they stay in our body, they stay deeply in our system, and then whatever is happening to us, there's a tendency to see everything through those filters, cognitive and emotional filters. And when we are not practicing, we probably don't know anything about it. And then through the practice, we slowly, slowly start to notice the repetitions, the cycle, the hamster wheel, which is like going on and on and on. And then once we start to notice that, then we, there's an interest starts to awaken, how can that, happen? And what can I actually do to step out of that wheel? And that is not only, on a small level, like me and my cup of coffee or the one thing, I really need, because that's quite innocent and that's really okay. But it can be also really huge things like addiction, a whole civilization being addicted to fossil fuels, a whole civilization having built all of its systems, on certain, in certain ways, which are kind of bordering on self-destruction. And then it really gets quite, it's quite different, than just a cup of coffee, because it has such a vast impact, and often a vast impact on people who haven't really had such a big hand in creating those systems. At this time, many of the countries in the global south, they experience a lot of the repercussions which have been set in motion by, by the countries in the global north. So, allowing those connections, to become conscious is a very challenging process, because it's painful, at a time when, basically the glory of the narrative has lost its luster, and it starts to kind of fall apart and showing more and more cracks, and then we can either, get really depressed about it, or we can really start getting an interest what comes up through the cracks, what becomes visible through the cracks of the narrative, the cracks of the worldview, what does want to become conscious. And then, kind of really looking into those cracks and inviting what wants to come through to come. And I think, having a practice like ours is really so such a good starting point, where we have, all of the core concepts of the Buddhist teaching are just like so compatible with what's happening right now, in particular, like the three characteristics about impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self or emptiness. It is such a perfect fit, really. And then, seeing that this doesn't only pertain, to my own little life and my own body or my own environment, no, it pertains to a whole world systems, to whole worldviews, and that is a different kind of experience, you know, to really allow that into consciousness can be quite destabilizing for some time. And then it's really important, you know, to use the practice to ground ourselves and resource ourselves by coming back to the beginning, you know, coming back to the source, coming back to that which is, you know, at the base of our experience. And one way of looking at that is looking at what is called, you know, the six elements: the earth element, water element, fire element, wind element, space element, and consciousness element. That's one way, you know, how our experience can be understood or kind of, you know, laid out. And you know, I think that's a very powerful meditation. Even, you know, it comes from us, it comes to us from you know, from Iron Age India, really, and it still is so applicable and so transformative. And, you know, and even more pertinent than ever before because of the situation we are in. And, you know, and if we start, you know, to take really an interest in that by really, you know, training ourselves to, you know, calm the mind and come to our senses, you know. Because the mind is just one of six senses in Buddhism, and it doesn't have, you know, like a priority position. It's just like one of the six senses, such as, you know, smelling is one, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, and thinking. And, you know, the ears hear sounds, and, you know, the nose perceives odors, and the mind thinks. So the mind isn't considered more important than the other senses. But somehow, you know, the way how we are operating, that's what's happening for us. We are very, very under the influence of what our mind tells us. And a lot, you know, what we learn in meditation is to develop capacity to be less overpowered by those stories. And not only, you know, like personal stories, but much, you know, bigger stories such as worldviews, you know, narratives, cultural narratives, or civil, you know, the basis of our civilization, which, you know, takes its, a lot of its assumptions comes, you know, from a long time ago, thousands of years ago. You know, Greek philosophy and Christianity and other, you know, worldviews, they are at the root of the way how we understand ourselves and how we understand our world, you know, as a kind of a machine which we can manipulate to our benefit. And, you know, that has worked for quite a time, but now it starts to kind of, you know, really hit the limits of that understanding. And, you know, that activates a lot of trauma, I think, in many people, you know, unresolved trauma of, you know, having like certain expectations no longer met, and then, you know, we kind of shut down, really, which is a, you know, intelligent response on one level, you know, because it protects us from overwhelm. But then also, at the same time, you know, we can also see that as a wake-up call, you know, to work on the capacity to allow information into our consciousness, to just try slowly, to widen the capacity by working with that numbness, working with that apathy, or working with that hyperactivation and fear, which it brings up. So that we, will be able to stay in relationship with what's happening, and then, respond in whatever way is the way we feel called to respond. And I think, that's what I find a very important part of the practice these days, and that's also what motivated me to develop that earth room, because I think to have a real dedicated space for this way of practicing can be helpful, a space where this intention is somehow symbolically externalized, and then when we step into the space, something is going to come forth, because we feel somehow this intention feels held in a way which is kind, and benevolent, and somehow open, it doesn't assume anything, but it somehow presents an opening, for something new to emerge into consciousness. As it has happened so many times before. But we just don't remember it. So, this meditation on the elements, which I was sharing with you last time, and today, the meditation on metta. Those two meditations are both belong, to a set of meditations, as a set of meditations of four meditations, which are called the protective meditations. And, we can all find them all in the suttas, and then they have been, put together in a list as the four protective meditations, which was probably stems from the 5th century Sri Lanka. And they are called protective meditations because, they are protecting us from our own ignorance, from our own greed, and from our own ill will, and also from the ignorance, greed, and ill will of others. That's why they are called protective, not because they are, taking away the problems for us, but they give us a way to work with the difficulties. And so there are four. Two of them we already, spoke about, and we even used them. One was the meditation on the elements, and the other one metta meditation. And then there's two more, and one is the meditation on recollection of the Buddha, and another one is recollection of death. And for the remainder of the time today, I just want to give us a small overview about these four protective meditations, and then when I ever I come back to you, I continue and also share the other two with you. And so the traditional order is the first one, the first two, they show us the potential of a human life. They elevate the mind. And the second two show us the limitations of a human life. And they support letting go of attachment. And in that way, they can bring balance. And depending on what mind state is there, we can use whatever is the appropriate, antidote. It's like a medicine, and we go in the cupboard, medicine cupboard, and see you have a stomach ache, you take that, or you have a headache, you take something differently. And the same with those meditations. And they reinforce, the corresponding wholesome mind states, which are, essential for bringing the mind into balance and, guarding the mind from negativity. It's like, or can be, either it can be a medicine if it's already, if the negativity has already taken hold, or it can be a preventative also, by training the mind in that way. And they are, transforming obstacles into opportunities, we can say. Because they remind us of what is really true and possible as a human being. Because the Buddha, for example, recollection of the Buddha is important to not forget, the Buddha was a human being like us. He wasn't like, he was special, because he had been cultivating, his mind over many, many, many lifetimes. And but he was also a human being. That's really important to not to forget. And so that meditation, recollection of the Buddha, can bring up faith and confidence in our own capacity, show us what's possible, overcome fear, and uplift the mind. When the mind feels like, really, I can't do this, I can't do this. Just bringing that up. And the metta meditation is most of all, an antidote to ill will or anger and fear, and opens up the mind, brings the mind back on track. What gives us capacity, to embrace what's happening or to permeate what's happening with metta. And sometimes it's translated, as unconditional love or benevolence, as you know. And in a way, we can say, greed, for example, if we go through a fire of greed consciously, it slowly but surely transforms into metta or attachment, attachment, wanting something to be a particular way. If we can really go through the transforming process, it just opens up and becomes more and more unconditioned. And then the next, so this is the two which show us the potential of a human life: reflection on the qualities of the Buddha and metta. And then the next two, Asubha means beautiful in Pali, and Asubha is the not beautiful. And that's classically seen, it's the meditation on the body parts. And I include in it also the meditation on the elements. And it shows us, a different side of our bodies and of the bodies of others. On one hand, the element meditation shows us that these bodies are actually not separate from the planet and are constantly in exchange, and are actually, we could say these bodies are secretions of the planet. How odd is that? That's not something one easily notices, as we are going through the day, because it all feels so real, so hard, so. But it is like this if you really start thinking about it, or reflecting on it rather. And then we can even, if we have reflected in this way for some time, we can start to sense into it. Sensing the body from inside, sensing into the soil, and sensing that there is no separation. And that's like a way, you know, of perceiving reality which comes online as we are training. It's just like if you're training yourself to play the piano, it's not going to happen in one day. So it leads to this identification with our bodies being a separate entity. And as I said, you know, I think it's a very important information to integrate these days. And then the last one is a recollection of death, you know, which classically is there to give us a sense of urgency. It's also considered a remedy for heedlessness. And it teaches us about life. You know, if we can integrate the recollection of death, funny enough, you know, become more alive, because it's a more whole understanding of life. Because death is not the opposite of life. Death is just the, if it's the opposite of anything, it's the opposite of birth. Because at the moment of death, at the moment of birth, sorry, our death comes along. Before we are born, we can't really die, but we can even die, you know, in a mother's womb. But before we are conceived, you know, we can't really die. So that's, you know, a very important reflection as well. And is the cutting edge, you know, of impermanence reflection, really. And can, you know, if it's integrated, brings us a sense of relief. Because we can somehow, you know, intuitively we feel we are much more stable if we allow death into consciousness, because it's true. So, and they are called protective meditations because they really protect us from, you know, getting sidetracked. And help us, you know, to come back to the middle way by seeing, you know, this life has incredible potential, but there's also limitations, and we need to work with both sides. And that's really beautiful, I think. And also, you know, it's so clear, you know, we are not alone with this. We are all together in this. And it gives us a stronger sense of community, you know, with other sentient beings. Because they all are on the path in some way, you know. They all are born and they will die at one point. They all have these very sensitive bodies, soft bodies, which are not separate. So that's a very universal experience for many beings. And if we, you know, allow that into consciousness, it can help us to, you know, have more capacity to disidentify with, you know, what the mind tells us. Which is, you know, the way how we can step back and see things in a wider context and then allow some new ways of understanding to emerge out of that wider seeing. That opens up the path, as this some of these perceptions, are understood and let go of, as somehow, a healing occurs and we experience ourselves as more connected and have more capacity to stay with our experience without needing to go into the head and make stories about it. And then, as the mind activity is less wild and less scary, we have more capacity to come to our senses, and really experience life through our sense organs directly. No need, to split off the energy into the head and think about everything so much. And then, sense making becomes possible. We can make sense of our experience because we are in direct, in direct contact. And that leads to more aliveness, really, and capacity to take part in the transition. Feel more motivation, more commitment to do the work, to be who we are, in this long chain of evolution, which comes out of deep time and is going into the future. And we are just a little blip and an important one because we all need it for this. We all have a little role to play. And we might as well enjoy it, I would say. Why not? So I think that brings me to the end of what I wanted to say. And I should have left some time maybe for questions. I don't know. I forgot. Sorry, I got carried away. So if there are any questions, I'm happy to stay a little bit longer. If there are any comments even, or yeah, I'd be very happy to. So just wait a minute or two, and then if nothing comes, then Vita will read the metta dedications for us. Mary?
So I do like the elements, and I like using them for meditation because it gets myself gets the selfing out of there a lot for me, which I find is really, really useful. And the other thing that I found that was, is when I am meditating and when I start to hear when the narrative starts, it's so interesting because my narratives, when I realize that they're almost always about greed or aversion, and occasionally a nice mixture of delusion. But it's generally speaking, they're not about, it's usually about those things. There's so, like, when I notice that that's what's going on, I can kind of look and go, okay. And sometimes I can just say, not now, and it will drop away. But mine, I don't know if other people have narratives that are all beautiful and lovely, but mine tend to be about those three things. And for me, they're when I'm meditating, they're usually a clue that that it's just something I can put down. If I can, just put it down as best as I'm able. But I don't know if you have any thoughts about that yourself.
Well, yeah, I think everybody's stories will be founded, you know, on those three, the three poisons, as they are called sometimes, the three roots. Yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah, when they come up, and they can be beautiful or terrible stories, but still, you know, they have something of that in it. And yeah, and it's good to notice it, you know. And there's also, you know, there can also be stories of benevolence and loving kindness, I think, and service and so on. That can also be there, you know, and just really know the difference, and knowing, you know, that if we come into the body, we'll be most effective to really serve and be there. Yeah, thank you, Mary. And Bowman.
Yes, thank you. Great meditation, great guided meditation and talk. I really got a lot out of this. I really appreciate it. I've never really connected the protective meditation, so the elements, you know, metta, recollection of the Buddha, and recollection of death. I've studied all of those, but not sort of, you know, thought about them in a way of balancing, of balancing and finding equanimity in the senses. So I really appreciate it. It's really great reflection. And we have been to San Rafael and would love to come to the Earth Room the next time we're in California. We're in Georgia right now.
Oh, yes, please do. Looking forward to see you.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. Really lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.